Okay, good morning, everybody. This is Bible 231. It's February 25th, and you don't have a lecture exam today. Right? No lecture exam today. Let me put that in. Not too bad. Ah, that's better. Okay, so Bible 231, February 25th. No lecture exam today, but what about on Wednesday? Here you see the schedule. As in the syllabus. Today, the 25th, we're just going to have a lecture on bones and skeletal tissue. That's the last chapter that will be included on the lecture exam. And I'm going to turn a couple of these lights down a little bit, maybe that one down too, so that you can see the board a little bit better. So, next time, February 27th, exam number one, it's going to cover 1 through 6, but not chapter 3. All right, so chapter 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6. 1, 2, 4, 5, and 6. On the lecture exam. And the way that you know for sure if you're prepared for that exam is to use the study guide that's in Blackboard for you. And maybe it even came with your textbook, but maybe not. Maybe it's just in Blackboard. It's got the exam figures you got to know. I could put some of those exam figures, and then you're going to have to label it from a word bank. Also tells you what end of the chapter questions I like, what online questions I like, and don't forget the pre-lecture reading assignment questions. Those are good for you to review as well. All right, so all of that information is good. Anybody? Oh, some other things about the test. Got to bring a picture ID. Make sure, because I don't know who you are. Picture ID when you turn your test in. Cypress College picture ID or Fullerton College picture ID. And you need a Scantron. What kind of Scantron do you need? I have it in here someplace. 882E. 882E. Is that it? Okay, it's in your syllabus exactly. It's just it's like the quarter page, but it's two sides. So you might have 100 questions on the test. Yeah, 882. Not E. Don't get the LOVAS form. Because my test is given, so the answers are A, B, C, D, E. This LOVAS form has the answers as 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So if that's easy for you to know what is a 4 or a 5 in terms of letters, that's fine. But otherwise, you're going to have to go back and forth. And also, if somebody is dyslexic, right, and you're trying to use a LOVAS form, which is 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, you might have a trouble seeing what's the difference between a B and a D on the Scantron. But if you just use this form here, the 882E, all you got to do is match the letters up. Right, you don't have to do anything in your mind because the answers are all given in capital letters. Capital A, capital B, capital C, just like on the Scantron right here. Also a pencil and a good eraser. And if there are smudges on your Scantron and the Scantron reader can't read it, then you might get gypped out of those points. All right, so make sure you have a good eraser with your pencil that you're going to use on the exam. Get a clean piece of paper, make a mark on that clean piece of paper, erase it with your eraser. And if it smudges, throw the eraser away. I don't even care if you pay $25 for it, right? Throw it away. Because if you take a board exam, you'll never get the board exams back. If you smudge up a board exam answer sheet, you might fail the board exam. And that's hundreds of dollars down the tube. That might be worth $500. You might miss passing the board exam by one question that got smudged or something, right? So don't smudge up your Scantrons. Don't mutilate it or mark it up one way or another. All right, so that's some things about the test. Get here early. I'll get here right after lab. And as soon as you're ready to take the test, come on into the room, and I'll give you a copy of the test, even if it's before the class period starts. All right, so come on in. That's when I know you're ready to study. So just put your books away, come on in, and get going on the test. Probably have plenty of time, but give yourself some breathing room. Anybody have a question on the test for Wednesday? You all know there's a test Wednesday, right? Okay, first lecture exam, first 25% of the class. Okay, so today we better cover some material on just skeletal tissues. So I'll put this away. All right, so let's look at some components of skeletal tissue. You all know what the skeleton is. All right, I hear some questions. Somebody's got a question over there, back there. All right, listen up, you guys, because this is on the test. So you probably don't want to be horsing around. Who's talking back there? Okay, listen up, you guys. You just don't want to listen. Okay, well, I can turn up the microphone so that you guys just listen. Don't, if you need to carry on a conversation, go outside so you don't interrupt anybody, right? So just hold on. Okay. All right, so let's look at the components of the skeletal system. We see a picture of it over here on the right-hand side, but it's also on the left-hand slide telling you what it is. It is bone, that's easy to know, but it's also cartilage and ligaments. So cartilage, you know, is associated with bone. It can form a structure just like bone, but it's a lot lighter, and it's also bendable in some cases. All right, so it's better than bone because it's lighter, and if it doesn't have to support a lot of weight, then that's fine. It doesn't have to be made out of bone. A ligament, let's define what a ligament is. A ligament is dense, regular connective tissue, and it connects a bone to a bone. So it's sort of like a ligament, but a ligament is a bone-to-muscle connection. A ligament is a bone-to-bone connection. So ligaments will reduce the motion between two bones or actually prevent motion between two bones that are forming a joint. All right, so let's look at the slide on the right. All right, here we got Mr. Skeleton, and we have cartilage in three different colors. We got blue and maybe an orange and a red. What's this one right here? Is that orange or green?
Green.
Okay, we've got green. Blue, green, red. All right, so hyaline cartilage, right? This is one form of the connective tissue that you're familiar with. What kind of fibers does hyaline cartilage have in it if you were to look at it underneath a microscope? The answer would be none. It doesn't have any fibers. It's just kind of translucent, right? So hyaline cartilage is just translucent. You can see chondrocytes and lacunae, but no fibers, right? And it makes articular cartilage. It makes cartilage at the ends of bones that make a joint. It also makes the ribs, makes cartilages in the nose. Okay, and that's a pretty good example of all these things. Elastic cartilage, a really good example is your ear, for instance, because you can bend your ear and you let go and it flops back up. Don't forget, elastic fibers are not as strong as cartilage fibers, so it's easy to damage your ear, those elastic fibers. And then the most strong kind is fibrocartilage, right? It has chondrocytes and lacunae, but what's the fiber in fibrocartilage? Different than elastic cartilage. Yeah, it's collagen. And could you rank collagen in terms of strength of the three kinds of fibers you know? What are those three fibers that you know? Collagen is one. Reticular is one. And elastic. Yeah, which one's the strongest? Collagen. Which one's the weakest? Reticular. And which one is the stretchy one? Well, I don't even want to wait around for that answer. You all know that. Okay, so fibrocartilage has collagen fibers, and it's going to form joints that has to withstand a lot of tension or a lot of compression. And these joints are in cartilages between the vertebral bodies of your vertebral column. So these vertebrae press down on each other right at this region right here, and there is some cartilage between them that has to be strong. That's fibrocartilage. Okay, there's some fibrocartilage in your knee as well. We call these the menisci, which is different than the kind of cartilage that covers the ends of these bones, which is hyaline cartilage. But the knee menisci are pretty tough because they're loaded with collagen fibers. And another example would be the pubic symphysis. It's the joint between the pelvic bones that help make up the pelvis, pubic symphysis. That's an immovable joint under most circumstances, but it can be converted into a movable joint. Say during parturition, there are enzymes that break this cartilage down, which allows for disarticulation of the pelvic bones to allow for birth to happen through the birth canal. Okay, and then after you give birth, what happens to that joint? It kind of goes back together again. Not exactly, but more or less. Okay, so those are the three kinds of cartilage where you find them. You should be aware of, well, here is some others. Okay, hyaline cartilage makes up the trachea and some bronchioles. And here is elastic cartilage, the epiglottis. Epiglottis is a nice trapdoor that folds down over the trachea when you swallow something so that you don't get food or water into the windpipe. Another name for the trachea is the windpipe. That's just a usual kind of name. Now, on this slide, I see fibrocartilage right here, but do you see any fibrocartilage on this slide? Tell me no, because I don't see it. No. Good. Okay. Thought I was missing it. Now, here are the micrographs that you should be aware of what? Hyaline cartilage, elastic cartilage, and fibrocartilage. So they're pretty easy to see. In all cases, we have lacunae with chondrocytes on the inside of them. All right. So that's pretty good as far as the cartilage is concerned. So let's look at functions. Well, ligaments, you know what a ligament looks like. It's just dense, regular connective tissue, right? It has a few fibroblasts here and there, but all the collagen fibers are all lined up in parallel sheets, so it's really easy to tell what dense, regular connective tissue is, like what's in your book. Okay, functions of the skeletal system. Number one is support, and in particular, bone. Bone is very strong and rigid. It's not bendable. And because of how it's made, it can withstand a lot of weight. It can withstand compression. And so that's the most important thing. It sort of reminds me of that column, that cement column that we have in the room that's holding up the rest of the building. That's really good. That's kind of what bone does in a lot of respects. Except there's a big difference that we're going to see. This cement column right here is not living tissue. Bone is living tissue. And in lab, we mentioned what kind of cells are found in mature bone. Does anybody remember what kind of cells are in bone? They're called osteocytes. Yeah, those osteocytes are living. They need oxygen and nutrients. They need calcium and phosphorus to make bone. And as a matter of fact, those osteocytes make a whole new skeleton for you. All these bones get dissolved and repaired and put back where they belong every 5 years. So every 5 years, all these bones are replaced. Unlike the cement that we have in this building, it's been there for decades, or however old this building is. It's never replaced, right, this column that's been there. But your bones are being replaced all the time. So your bones are really busy rebuilding themselves. Cartilage. Let's talk about cartilage. It's firm but flexible, so you might have some parts of your body that you want to bend. Like your rib cage, you want to expand when you inhale and then go back down to its original shape when you exhale. So rib cage is important. Right, your ear, we talked about, your nose has hyaline cartilage in it. And sometimes cartilage can also be used as a precursor during development to model out where bones should be in your body. So most of the bones in your body were made out of cartilage, hyaline cartilage in particular, before they became bones. So that's how osteocytes really know where to make a bone, because there's a little model of cartilage of where that bone should be. All right. Another important thing here for support that makes cartilage nice is that it's a lot lighter than bone. If all the cartilage in your body was made out of bone, you would be a lot heavier. Which means what? You'd need more energy to haul that bigger body around. Right? So there's some cost to being heavier. And of course, if you were a bird, then you probably couldn't even fly if all that cartilage was bone. All right? But we're not birds. Right? But it'd still be much more difficult to move around. Okay, bone is important, and even cartilage is important for protection. So the skull, so here we see the skull, that's what we're looking at in lab last week and this week. The skull, partly, at least the cranial bones, form some armor plating around the brain. That brain is nervous tissue, it's very delicate, can be damaged very easily, but the skull bones protect the brain from most kinds of damage. Okay, unless you hit your head really hard. The rib cage, here we have rib cage. It protects the vital organs inside the rib cage. Could anybody tell me one vital organ that's inside the rib cage? The heart is in there for sure. Okay? Can't go very long without a heart, and even the lungs are protected by the rib cage. That's a vital organ as well. And vertebral column. Here is the vertebral column. When we line all of them up, it forms a canal on the inside that the spinal cord goes through. So these vertebrae right here also act as armor plating for another part of the central nervous system, right? It's not the brain. The brain is part of the central nervous system, but the spinal cord is another part of the central nervous system that's protected by the vertebrae. So bone is important for protection. All right, now this is probably one that you're familiar with, a function for movement, for motion. All right, muscles attach to bones. And what's the function of muscle when we look at histology of muscle? What is muscle specialized for? For contraction, right? That's what a muscle can do. It can contract. And a muscle will have basically two ends to it. So one end could be attached to this bone, another end could be attached to this bone over here, and when that muscle is stimulated, it's going to contract. And what's going to happen to these two bones? They're going to get pulled together. Yeah, they're going to get pulled together. That particular motion, indeed, is flexion, right? And that motion is controlled by the nature of this joint right here. But basically, when you have muscles between two bones, those bones are going to get closer together. Muscles can't push things apart. They can only pull bones back together again. All right, so motion is real important. What do we call a bone-to-bone connection? Bone-to-bone. Ligament. What do we call a muscle-to-bone connection? Tendon. Same kind of tissue, just a little bit different name. Bones also make joints, which define what kind of motion is allowed in your body. Like, you can move your head from right to left. That's a rotation because of the way the joint is constructed. At your elbow, it works just like a hinge joint because of the way the bones are constructed in the elbow. Okay, and your shoulder can do all kinds of fancy motions because the bones have a certain formation within the shoulder joint, which allows that motion. And all joints have ligaments from spanning from one bone to another that can prevent motion between bones, like the bones in the skull. We call those sutures. Those are the sutural joints in the skull that prevent motion, which is good. It'd be really nice if your skull could open up like that with a joint and we could just pour information in there, but it doesn't work that way, right? There's no joints that allow that to happen. Right, so, and then there are some joints that have ligaments that go across the knee that stabilize the knee joint. Probably you all heard of the anterior cruciate ligament or ACL, posterior cruciate ligament, lateral collateral ligaments. You probably read about these things all the time in newspapers and sports pages or on newscasts and things like that. Okay, two more important things about bone. Maybe you haven't thought of before. And bones are important reservoir or storage area for calcium ions. You probably already knew that bones are made primarily out of calcium, right? And that's how you make bones strong, is by having proper calcium in your diet. But there are many other processes that require calcium in your body. And those other processes you might even think to be more important than to have strong bones. Hard to imagine right now, but it is true. So when your body runs out of calcium to run other kinds of important functions, guess where your body goes first to get that calcium? From your bones. And then what happens to your bones? They get weaker as a result of that, right? So if you have improper calcium, your body doesn't run out of calcium, but your bones sure do, and they get weaker. We're going to talk about that in just a little bit. It also stores phosphorus in the form of inorganic phosphate. So it's just a phosphorus atom with some oxygens bound to it. If you've taken some chemistry, you sort of have a feel for what this is like. We just call this thing inorganic phosphate. It gets put together with calcium to make that really hard matrix that resists compression, just like cement in that column there. And some bones have spaces in them that we call cavities, right? And in that cavity, there is something called bone marrow. And there are two kinds of bone marrow. This one that I'm pointing at right here, yellow bone marrow, is just adipose connective tissue. So it stores fat for us. So bone is important because it stores calcium, stores inorganic phosphate, but also stores fat. And what's good about fat? It's an energy reserve, right? It's an energy reserve. So in case we don't have something to eat, we can go months and months and months without eating. But not drinking. We still need water for sure. Okay, and some of us couldn't go months and months and months because we just don't have enough fat. The fifth thing, red blood cell production or blood cell production. I don't want to say just red. Okay, but in the cavities, we said sometimes those cavities are filled with yellow bone marrow and sometimes they're filled with red bone marrow. Red bone marrow doesn't store fat, but it's a kind of marrow that can produce red blood cells and platelets. Red blood cells carry oxygen in our body, and that's why it looks a little bit red, because it has a lot of hemoglobin. And so we call bone a hemopoietic tissue, because it can undergo hemopoiesis. Hemopoiesis is just the function of producing red blood cells. So bones are very important for producing red blood cells. In lab, maybe you've looked at some red blood cells. They're kind of a funny cell. Why are they kind of funny, atypical for a cell? Because they're missing something. What are they missing? Yeah, they're missing a nucleus. All right. And as a result, when a red blood cell becomes damaged or gets older, it cannot repair itself because it doesn't have a nucleus. Therefore, it has a relatively short lifespan. It can only live for about 120 days, and then it dies. Its components are recycled to make new red blood cells. And in lab, I mentioned, how many red blood cells die in your body every second because they just don't live long? It's about between 1 and 2 million die every second. What do you call that disease process when you run low on red blood cells? What's that called? Anemia. So what does your body have to do to prevent you from becoming anemic if 1 to 2 million red blood cells are dying every second? You got to build 1 to 2 million red blood cells every second to replace those that are lost. So not only are your bones real busy rebuilding themselves, but your blood is real busy rebuilding itself as well. Okay, so you're really busy, even though you're not studying. Maybe you're just sleeping. You're still really, really busy. Okay, so what is a hematopoietic tissue? It's a kind of tissue that does what? It builds blood cells. Okay, that's a hematopoietic tissue. All right, so that's all a function of bone. Cartilage. I think we're kind of familiar with different kinds of cartilage. The hyaline cartilage doesn't have any fibers visible underneath the microscope. Right, so it kind of looks like a glass, translucent glass with lacunae, little pits or bubbles filled with chondrocytes. Anytime you hear chondro, what should you think of? Cartilage, right? Okay. And here's where you find it. We talked about this already. Trachea, articular cartilage, those, for instance. Elastic cartilage, similar to hyaline cartilage, but it has elastic fibers. For instance, your ear and your nose are made out of these, the kind of cartilage, which is a very bendable kind of cartilage. And then fibrocartilage is the strongest. And these are resist compression and tension to some degree. You can damage those kinds of cartilage if you overstress them, like you can damage an intervertebral disc, even though it's fibrocartilage, but that's nonetheless the strongest kind. Okay, we can classify bones by their shape. Well, that's nice because this is an anatomy class. All right, so the types of bones, we got long bones, which are long. Okay, that means in one dimension, that dimension is relatively large compared to the two other dimensions. And remember, there's three spatial dimensions that we can look at something. So two short dimensions, one long dimension, that makes it a long bone. We see it over here. This is a good example would be the humerus. Now, what do we call this part of the body that the humerus is in? Okay, between your shoulder and your elbow is your arm. Okay, yeah, some people are saying brachium. That's pretty good. That's a region, but that's your arm. What do we call between your elbow and your wrist? That's your forearm, right? Okay, and I see two long bones in the forearm, one long bone in the arm, and the long bone in the arm is the humerus, a really good example of a long bone. A short bone. A short bone is pretty much the same dimension no matter how you look at it, from right to left, from anterior to posterior, from superior to inferior. And there are bones like that, okay, in the ankles and the wrists. So here is a short bone. A good example would be a talus. We're going to look at a talus when we get to the ankle, probably in a couple weeks. Okay, trapezoid is in the wrist, would be another good example, but here you can see there's no dimension that is really long. Sesamoid. Okay, sesamoid is a bone like the patella right here. And a sesamoid bone is completely surrounded by tendon. It's found within a tendon and or a ligament. And this patella is in a ligament between the femur and the tibia. So there's a tendon, that a ligament that attaches here, and then another one that attaches to the tibia, and the patella is embedded right within that ligament. There can be other normal locations where we find sesamoid bones, maybe in the thumb area right here, and there can also be a lot of sesamoid bones in joints that are being used improperly. They can just spontaneously form in tendons, which is then a pretty serious irritation to that particular joint. So that would be caused by repetitive use. So a sesamoid bone, for instance, in the finger or wrist could be a repetitive use injury. And that can be diagnosed really easily with x-rays, because x-rays show bones really nicely. All right, but for you, a good example of a sesamoid bone is the patella. That's normally occurring. Irregular. Here's a vertebrae that makes the vertebral column, and it's got all kinds of processes coming out of it. Here's the major part. It's got a spine sticking out the back, so it has an irregular shape. It's not long. It's not short. It just has an irregular shape. And some bones are flat, like the sternum. Here's the breastbone, and it kind of looks like a long bone, but if you look at the dimension from anterior to posterior, it's going to be very short. Right, from right to left, it's kind of long. From superior to inferior, it's really long. But from anterior to posterior, it's really thin. So we call that a flat bone. other flat bones. We find in the cranium, they're going to be very thin bones, kind of like plates. Okay, so those are some types of bones by shape. And we're going to learn something about bones by looking at a particular kind of bone. And we'll do this in lab even. We're going to look at a long bone to understand the pieces that kind of make up all the other bones. But it makes the most sense in a long bone. So here's a long bone. And in particular, this looks like the humerus that we were just looking at. And here is the part of the humerus that attaches to the shoulder joint. Here is the part of the humerus that attaches to the elbow joint, or makes up part of the elbow joint. And so the ends of a bone we call the epiphysis. The word's got a little bit of a swing to it, but you probably want to be able to spell that out, right? The end of the bone, or the epiphysis of the humerus that's attached to the shoulder, is closer to some region in your central region in your body. So that's the proximal epiphysis. The one that's farther away is going to be called the distal epiphysis, and hopefully it is labeled just that way, right? So the epiphyses are the ends of a long bone, proximal versus distal, depending on where the connection is. All right, so that's the ends of a bone, but there's also a center part of a long bone. We call that the shaft of a long bone, but it's got another name too, more scientific name. And what is that scientific name? It's got a little bit of a swing to it, like epiphysis is what? Diaphysis. The diaphysis, or shaft of a long bone, is really the same thing. Okay, in the epiphyses, we see something that looks like a sponge. And guess what kind of bone we call that? Spongy bone, right? It's got some other names to it. Okay, spongy bone, we can call it, I'll tell you later, cancellous bone, another kind, a trabecular bone. But it's spongy bone, it's not solid bone, there's a lot of little cavities. And guess what's in all these little cavities? Blood vessels. Blood vessels, yep, and also bone marrow. Could either be yellow bone marrow or red bone marrow, all depends on how old the person is. Okay, so spongy bone. If we look in the diaphysis, right, we see that it's really a tube. It's really a circular structure, and the very center of it is a cavity that we call the medullary cavity. And guess what it's filled with? It's filled with bone marrow, just like all these spaces up over here. And again, it could be yellow bone marrow or red. In this particular example, what kind of bone marrow is it?
Yellow
bone marrow, which means it's adipose tissue. It's storing energy for you. Right, if it was red, it would be making red blood cells. Okay, these long bones typically don't do that once we reach puberty. All right, so here is the diaphysis. Do you see much spongy bone right here in the diaphysis? Do I need to zoom in? Probably not too much. Okay, this kind of bone is what we call compact bone. This over here is spongy bone. Compact bone is just solid bone, kind of like what you looked at underneath the microscope. Can you see all of these lamellae right here? Kind of looks like tree rings. Compact bone is made out of what we call these osteons. Osteons are tubes with inside tubes, right? And all these line up around the diaphysis, which then make the diaphysis a tube. And what can you tell me about a tube in terms of strength? Almost impossible to compress, okay? You can bend it from side to side, like your pencils. You might be able to snap it. But if you push on your pencil from top to bottom and press, there's almost no way to break it without actually going through your hands, right? So the tubular structure makes bone almost incompressible, which is good because these bones are holding up all your body weight. So that's a nicely engineered feature of bones, right? And the tubular structures are made out of compact bone. The other thing that you notice is here I see some compact bone, and then here I see some spongy bone. Which kind of bone is superficial, compact or spongy? Compact bone, yeah, superficial. Deep bone is spongy bone. So that's another way of talking about two different kinds of bone. Deep bone is spongy, superficial bone is compact. And there's even another way of talking about it. When we look at any organ, on the superficial part of the organ, it's usually going to have a different structure, which means what? A little bit different function, because the shape is going to change, compared to the deeper parts of that organ. So typically, when we talk about organ structure, the part that is superficial is what we call the cortical region of an organ. And remember, bone is a living tissue, so it's really an organ. All right, so the superficial part is the cortex, and the deep part, does anybody know what the deep part is called? That's the medulla of an organ. Superficial part cortex, the deep part is the medulla. So sometimes the spongy bone we call medullary bone because it's deep inside the bone. Right? So spongy bone or medullary bone is really the same thing. Compact bone, superficial bone is also called cortical bone because it's in the superficial region of the bone. And remember, cortical bone is what? The solid kind of bone made out of all these osteons right here. Okay. Here is a cavity. Okay. Now, where is this cavity located in the diaphysis? Is it located in the cortex or the medulla? Medulla. Some people said medulla. Why did you choose medulla? Because it is? It's deep inside the bone, right? Which, that's what medullary means, or that's what medulla means. It means it's deep inside the organ. So here is the medullary cavity, and it's made, it's filled with some kind of bone marrow, one kind or another. All right, so that's a lot about bone. Got a few more things to look at. Surrounding every bone is some soft tissue, namely a membrane. And there's a, and that membrane has, is called an osteon. And since it's surrounding the bone on the outside, peri means surrounding. Here is the periosteum that surrounds the bone. And here it's been pulled away from the cortical surface of the bone. Here's the periosteum. Okay. Oh, it's labeled periosteum. That's nice. Okay, periosteum surrounds every exterior surface of the bone, right, except where there's articular cartilage. Then the cartilage is the most superficial part. So what am I pointing to right here on this cutaway view? This is the periosteum. Yeah, that's a membrane that's surrounding the bone. Okay, but there's another kind of membrane as well that lines every interior surface, and I can see it right here. Okay, and that is on the inside, so we don't want to call that periosteum. We want to call that the endosteum. Endosteum is the membrane on the inside of the bone. It lines every little nook and cranny on the inside of the bone. Right, even the smooth walls, relatively smooth walls of the medullary cavity, but also all of these little tiny cavities that we find in spongy bone. And we're going to see that the membrane has a couple different functions. Right, so you can see the endosteum here, the periosteum right there, and then here are some connective tissue fibers that attach the periosteum to the cortical surface of the bone. We call those Sharpie's fibers or perforating fibers that holds the periosteum to the bone. And then every once in a while, there's some holes in the bone. What do we call a hole in anatomy? Some people know this, some people don't because we haven't talked about it yet. But those of you that know, what do we call that? A foramen. Yeah, a foramen is just a fancy anatomical name for hole in a bone. And then you guys also know the function of a foramen. What is the function of a foramen? It's a passageway for something. And in this particular case, it's a passageway for a blood vessel. And that blood vessel is bringing in oxygen and nutrients to all of these bone cells in spongy bone as well as compact bone. And that foramen right there is called a nutrient foramen, because it's allowing that blood vessel to enter the bone. Okay, I wanted to turn the microphone down just a little bit. Maybe I turned it down too much. Okay, so when I point to this bone over here, for sure you see blood vessels, but what kind of bone is this? How could you talk about this bone? Spongy bone. What's another name for spongy bone? Medullary bone, because it's deep. Okay, that would be another good term. Here is, what kind of bone does this look like? Does it look spongy? No, it looks compact, solid bone. Another name would be cortical bone, because it's superficial. It's a superficial part of the bone. Okay, and we talk about bone all the time because somebody might have a tumor out over here, like a muscle tumor or some kind of tumor. And if that tumor, if you see it dissolving away, cortical bone over here, which is really easy to see on an x-ray, that's a bad sign. Right? If you have a tumor over here and you got a nice straight line in cortical bone, then you know that bone is not involved in that kind of tumor process, whatever it is. Could be cancer, for instance. So that's really nice to know and see these clear margins in cortical bone, for instance. Okay, let's look at, well, we talked about this slide. Oh, we missed something. Here I see a solid line moving through okay, the epiphyses between these spongy bones. We call this an epiphyseal line. If we cut the bone open, it just looks like a line. But remember, a bone is really a three-dimensional structure, and that line represents what? Really a plate that goes over the epiphysis. And in developing bone, before somebody reaches puberty, this bone right here is made out of hyaline cartilage and not solid bone. And what's the strength of hyaline cartilage compared to bone? Is it stronger or weaker? Is cartilage stronger or weaker than bone? It's got to be weaker. So this actually is sort of like a joint. We call that the epiphyseal plate when it's filled with cartilage instead of bone, which is weaker, which means it's relatively easy to damage compared to the rest of the bones in somebody before puberty. Right? And it just so happens that this epiphyseal plate right here with cartilage has cells that make bone grow from superior to inferior. It helps grow the bone in length. And if that epiphyseal plate is damaged, then that bone stops growing in length. Typical ways that it's damaged, we all used to do this, maybe even did this over the weekend, get on a swing set, okay, swing back and forth. And what's really fun? Swing really, really, really high as you can without crashing, and then, right, when you get really high, you jump off and you fly through the air. That's really fun, isn't it? Okay, but what's the bad part of that? Landing, okay, crunch. And then we apply axial compression to these bones, especially in your leg, and that can damage these epiphyseal plates. And, of course, if you damage one leg more than the other, then what happens? One leg is going to grow longer than the other. Okay, so that's one thing that can happen, and then you need a lift in one shoe in order to equalize your walking, your gait. Okay, so we always like to protect youngsters from damaging their long bones, keep them from jumping off of really high places, but it's also susceptible to twisting motion. If you twist that epiphyseal plate, okay, that can damage it, and then that bone won't grow in length either. So sometimes this is called a growth plate. The epiphyseal plate or the growth plate is exactly the same. And some people hurt their arms, especially their humerus and their arm, by throwing fancy kinds of baseball pitches. So if you have any youngsters in Little League, they're always taught to throw, they can throw fastballs, throw as fast as you want because you don't twist your arm. But they're taught never to throw like sliders and curveballs or other kinds of pitches because what do you have to do? You have to put a lot of spin on the ball to get them to curve. And when you put spin on the ball, guess what you're doing to your bones? You're twisting them. Okay? And that twisting motion can damage these epiphyseal plates or growth plates right here. All right, so that's another thing. There's an epiphyseal plate in the proximal epiphysis as well as the distal epiphysis in all long bones, and maybe even a couple locations depending on the complexity of the epiphyseal regions of that particular bone. Okay, so we talked about this one already, spongy bone, medullary bone, cortical bone. Okay, here is a flat bone that makes up the skull. Some of you might be able to tell me what bone that is. To me, it sort of looks like a parietal bone in this part of the skull, and it's flat, but nonetheless, on the inside of this flat bone, we see what? Yeah, we see spongy bone. There's no medullary cavity, but there's still spongy bone filled with bone marrow, and then here is cortical bone or compact bone, right, on the outside surface and on the inside surface. And sometimes this lattice work of spongy bone, we call these trabeculae, so sometimes we call this trabecular bone. They can all be used interchangeably. Spongy bone, medullary bone, trabecular bone, and there's even another name called cancellous bone. Okay, so you could use any of those, for instance. Okay. I do want to find another figure. Let's see where I have another figure at. Oh, here. Who's the next slide? Okay, so here is a cutaway of a long bone, right? And here I can see cortical bone. It's compact bone. Here I can see some medullary bone because it's spongy. And I see these tree rings. Right, we looked at those in lab already. Each one of these rings is called a lamellae. And so you have one lamellae on the outside, another one, and then another one on the outside of that. So these are what we call concentric lamellae that make up an osteon. So here is an ostium with all these concentric lamellae. And here I can see another lamellae that's kind of been just drawn a little bit differently so that you can see all the different layers or lamellae that make it up. This is what we call an ostion. And the ostion is the structural and functional unit of how compact bone is put together. All right, so we want to learn something about how an ostion is put together. Well, on the very inside, there's a canal that has blood vessels and even nerves going through it, bringing nutrients to all the cells that make up bone. And this is what we call the Haversian canal, or maybe the central canal. Central canal or Haversian canal is what contains all these blood vessels on the inside of an ostion. All right, so that means that a bone is highly vascular. Oh, look at all these blood vessels. Here's a Haversian canal going all the way up and down the length of the bone. So when you fracture a bone, what happens? You have hemorrhage because all those blood vessels break. And of course, that could be damaging, that could be dangerous. Right? And if the bone is a large bone, like this femur right here, that could even be fatal if that hemorrhage isn't stopped. Right? So that's definitely a downside. Nobody wants to die when they break a bone. But what's a good thing? What's the trade-off about having blood vessels in bones? Yeah, when you break a bone, it can repair itself pretty quickly. 4 to 6 weeks and that bone is rebuilt because it can get oxygen and nutrients. Like, give me the name of a nutrient that a growing bone or repairing bone might need. Calcium, yeah, calcium, an ion, calcium ion, and phosphorus as well to repair that bone, and it gets it from these blood vessels right here. Okay, so we see lamellae inside of lamellae, they make up an ostion, and then around all of these ostions, what do we see? More rings that completely circle the bone, which then again keeps the bone from compressing all those tubes. So bones are extremely strong. You can't compress it from end to end. These lamellae are not concentric lamellae, they are circumferential lamellae. Circumferential means surrounding the whole bone. So for sure I want you to know the difference between circumferential lamellae and concentric. Concentric make up an ostion, circumferential lamellae just glue all these ostions together in compact bone. Okay, let's see what else we have. So let's just zoom in to some little area within an ostion over here. So let's zoom into an ostion. So here is the central canal, and here is a little bit of endostium right here, right, because it lines every cavity inside of a bone. And what kind of lamellae do we have right here surrounding this central canal? This is a Haversian canal or central canal. These are what we call the concentric lamellae that make up the ostion. Right, and so there's a space between all of these concentric lamellae, and there's a little bubble right here that we call a lacunae. And I think you're familiar with lacunae because we saw them in cartilage and we talked about them in bone, but now you got to know a little bit more about them. In that little bubble or lacunae, oh yeah, here it is labeled, lacunae right here, there is a cell. Could you tell me the name of this cell right here? Would you want to call it a chondrocyte? You would say no. Would you want to call it an adipocyte? You would say no. You would want to call it an osteocyte. Yeah, anytime you hear that term osteo, you should think of bone. And an osteocyte is a kind of bone cell that lives in mature bone, bone that's already built. So here I see an osteocyte living within the lacuna, and there's a little nucleus for that osteocyte. Oh, here it is, osteocyte. That wasn't really a fair question, was it? Because you all know how to read. Okay, here's that osteocyte. Other things that I see is that in the central canal, we have an artery that is bringing oxygen, and it's got to get to the cell. But bone is solid. It's like a tabletop, and oxygen can't get through it. So there's got to be a way for nutrients and oxygen to get through it, and also for carbon dioxide that these cells are producing to get out of your body. And oxygen can diffuse through these little spaces. They look like cracks, but they really belong there. There are little spaces between lacunae, which contain cytoplasm from this osteocyte, so that oxygen can actually diffuse from one cell to another, right, and keeps those cells alive. And those little cracks are what we call canaliculi. Okay, canaliculi are these little spaces between lacunae that allow for nutrients and oxygen to diffuse from one space to another. So again, that just kind of underscores that bone is what? A very living tissue. It's very alive because of these osteocytes. All right, this is what you're familiar with in lab, the osteon. So the osteon is the structural and functional unit of compact bone, how it's made. Now, what did we call this tube right here? Here is a tube that's going along the long axis of the bone. We call that the central canal or Haversian canal. There's another kind of canal. Let's see if I can find this other kind of canal. Right. It doesn't go along the long axis, but it goes from side to side. Can I see a side to side canal? I think over here. It's not labeled. But here is the Haversian canal, right here. Here's one that's going in a transverse fashion. We call this a perforating canal. Perforating, going from side to side. I'm sure that's in your book someplace. What about this slide here? Ah, yes. All right, here's the Haversian canal going up and down along the long axis. Here's one in a transverse plane to the long axis. That's a perforating canal. It also has another name called a Volkmann's canal. All right, so Haversian was named after somebody. Volkmann, of course, was somebody's name too. I never met her, but they're probably not alive anymore. That's okay. Volkmann, perforating or Volkmann's canal. What's the membrane that lines every space inside of a bone? Endosteum. What's the membrane that lines the outside of a bone? Periosteum. Good, you got that. Then you got the Haversian canal versus the Volkmann's canal. What do we call all of these circles, all these lamellae and lacunae and the Haversian canal in the center? What do we call this thing? That's an osteon. Yeah, what does an osteon make up? It makes up compact bone. Not just one, but if we put a whole bunch together, that makes up compact bone. What kind of bone is compact bone? Where would you find it? Superficial, which means what? It's cortical bone. Cortical bone is superficial. Medullary bone is spongy bone. It's just a little bit deeper. All right, let me look at the word slide over here. Let's see what I missed. Not too much. All right, so cortical bone, sometimes it's called dense. That makes sense, compact or dense. Cortical bone sometimes is called Haversian bone because of all these Haversian systems that make it up. Medullary bone, you know, is spongy bone. Okay, medullary bone, spongy bone, cancellous bone, trabecular bone. And in a flat bone, it's called diploid. Okay, all these little trabeculae are called diploid. Chemical composition of bones. Okay, I do want you to pay attention to this. All right, there's two important kinds of compounds. There are inorganic compounds and organic compounds that make bone up. And an organic compound has some kind of carbon atom associated with it. All right, this is just a little bit of background. It has a carbon atom, and bound to that carbon atom is a hydrogen atom. And if you got a bunch of these carbon atoms together, we call that an organic compound. Now let's look at calcium. Here's the chemical abbreviation for calcium. It's capital C, little a. Right? And here is inorganic phosphate. Phosphate and four oxygens. That's another kind of compound. Of these three that I have, could you tell me which one is an organic compound? It's only the one on the left, right? Because it has a carbon and a hydrogen. That's organic. So these over here, because you don't have a carbon bound to a hydrogen, these are what we call inorganic compounds. Okay? So I don't necessarily want you to know that. I mention it in class because sometimes students have a really hard time visualizing the difference between organic and inorganic. And when I talk about it, it kind of just goes right over your head, right? And I don't want you to miss it. So organic is this kind of thing. These are like proteins and sugar molecules, right, and lipids. Or organic, these things, calcium and phosphate, they're really just modified metal ions inside of our body that give bone strength. Okay, let's look at the organic compounds first that make up bone. Well, there are cells, and cells are made up of organic compounds. Okay, and we talked about an osteocyte. Osteocyte is found in mature bone, right? It just maintains mature bone. That's its job. Okay. An osteoblast is another kind of bone cell, but is responsible for making a bone grow. It deposits new matrix. Remember, the matrix is just the stuff outside of a connective tissue between the cells. And what kind of tissue is bone? How many tissues do you know of for Wednesday? How many major kinds of tissues? There are four. Epithelium, connective, muscle and nervous tissue, right? And bone is which one of those four? It's connective tissue because the cells are separated by a large distance with a matrix between them. In the matrix, we find that calcium and phosphorus, but we're also going to see it has some fibers in there. All right, so an osteoblast builds growing bone, and an osteoclast does the opposite. It breaks bone down. Now, you might wonder, why do you have to break bone down? Well, if you ever break a bone and have bone fragments, you'd like to get those bone fragments out of muscles and tendons so they stop lacerating things up. So you need osteoclasts to do that. But also, remember, you get a new skeleton every 5 years. And in order to get a new skeleton, guess what your body has to do with the old one? It has to get rid of it, right? So there's a balance between osteoblasts and osteoclasts. And if that balance is maintained, right, if the activity of osteoblasts matches that of osteoclasts, what happens to your skeleton? Does it change? Or does it maintain itself? Yeah, if the breakdown equals the build-up, then your bones really don't change very much. They stay nice and healthy. But if the osteoclastic activity increases faster than the osteoblastic activity, what happens to your skeleton if the osteoclasts work faster than the osteoblasts? Then you lose your skeleton, right? You lose that calcium and phosphorus. And does anybody know, does that really happen in the real world when you lose that balance between blasts and clasts? Yeah, you're shaking your head. Uh-oh, better tell me about that because I don't want to lose my skeleton. What's it called? Osteoporosis. You mean that you actually lose your skeleton when you have osteoporosis? And the answer is yes, unfortunately. Okay? And it's kind of a weird disease because it will happen to everybody in here, especially women, because typically women have smaller, daintier bones than men. So as soon as they lose a little bit of bone, it becomes more significant. If somebody has really thick, strong bones, then you're kind of protected from osteoporosis. Well, even some women that have big bone structure, they're kind of protected from osteoporosis, right? But nonetheless, if you're lucky enough to live a long life, your bones will, you'll lose some bones because the osteoclastic activity works faster than the osteoblastic activity, and your bones get weaker and thinner and more brittle, which means then that they're more susceptible to fracture. Okay, and then what? Hemorrhage and all that kind of stuff. All right, so here's an interesting principle, which is going to be really important, overbearing principle, and that is, what can you tell me about the activity of osteoblasts and osteoclasts? Well, how would you describe the relationship between those two types of cells? Are they both pulling? Are they both pushing? Or is one pulling and one pushing, figuratively speaking? They're opposite each other. Right? And so you might think, and we call that antagonism. So blasts and clasts are antagonistic to each other, and you might have a really negative impression of what antagonism means. Do you like to be around friends that are antagonistic to you all the time? Maybe your brother, your sister, parents, maybe, hopefully not, right? Antagonistic, right? That really has kind of a negative connotation. But in terms of physiology, I want you to know that it's a very important concept. Right, because when you have antagonistic mechanisms like osteoblastic activity with osteoclastic activity, when it's balanced, that maintains what? A really healthy body. Okay, so antagonism is important. It maintains your body. It's for control and balance, precise control and balance. So here it is in terms of a cellular level. When we get into muscles, we'll see it in a more of a musculoskeletal level where you can maintain precise control and balance if you have systems that operate against each other, are antagonistic. And you're probably familiar with that already, and you could use an example of your automobile. What systems do you have in your automobile that are antagonistic to each other, but it provides for precise control and balance? And if you didn't have those antagonistic systems, you would never even think of driving your car. Okay? And has anyone ever driven a car not knowing that one of those systems was out? That's happened to me. It's never fun. And what am I thinking of? The accelerator and the brake pedal. They have opposite effects on the car, Without one or the other, you wouldn't have precise control and balance over the automobile, right? If you only had an accelerator, that would be a lot of fun, okay, and no brakes. Okay, I've been in a couple of cars like that. Really fun, but say you got in your car with that kind of malfunction, you're driving home from work and you got home, what would happen when you got home if you only had an accelerator? Yeah, you just have to wave goodbye because you couldn't stop, right? Nobody would like that when you got home. All right, so that's a really important concept in this class and also in physiology. Even more important in physiology is the concept of antagonism, two systems working against each other, but when they work against each other, your body can maintain balance and precise control of itself. All right, and if you lose one or the other, what does it produce? In this particular case, if you lose the osteoblastic activity, that produces a disease state that we call osteoporosis, which produces really weak bones. Okay, that's pretty important. Well, since we're talking about that, and you're probably concerned, well, how do you prevent osteoporosis from occurring inside your body? There are a couple ways to do that. You need three things. Anybody know what the three things are? And this is one reason why everybody hates anatomy and physiology classes. Okay, it's basically two kinds of categories. One is diet, which means what? You got to have calcium and phosphorus in your diet. Nobody really likes to diet or pay attention to what we eat because we just like French fries, which doesn't contain much calcium or phosphorus. Okay, all right, so diet is important, but there's something else that has to be in your diet, and that is vitamin D. Yeah, vitamin D allows you to absorb that calcium that you're eating. So even if you have proper calcium and phosphorus in your diet, it can't get inside your body without vitamin D. So that is important to have in your diet. And then this is what everybody hates. What else? Exercise, that's right. So diet and exercise are two ways that you can protect yourself from osteoporosis, because when you exercise, what happens to your bones? They feel that stress and they do what? Just like this muscle right here, if I were to walk around all day with a 10-pound weight contracting that muscle, guess what would happen to that muscle? As long as I didn't overdo it the first couple days. It would get bigger and bigger and bigger and stronger as a result of that, right? So when you exercise your bones, right, they get bigger and stronger just like a muscle does, right? So that's really important for protecting yourself from osteoporosis. All right, so these are the cells, part of the organic compounds, but there's another thing that's organic, and it's a fiber. And it's a strong fiber, which means it is collagen. It's a protein, okay, and collagen gives bone some flexibility, but it also gives the bone some resistance to stretching and twisting. Right? So it's good for resisting tension and torsion. Torsion is just another way of saying twisting. Tension is just another way of saying resisting stretching. So bones can't twist very easily and they can't stretch very easily because it has this organic compound in it, namely collagen, fibers. All right, let's look at some inorganic compounds. These are just minerals, calcium and phosphate, and special kinds of combinations. I don't think I want you to know what these combinations look like chemically, but you should at least know what? Calcium and inorganic phosphate. And in the body, they're put together in a form that we call hydroxyapatite, which is just a way of putting calcium and phosphorus together to make bones strong. You might hear that word, hydroxyapatite. I won't test you on it unless it's at the end of the chapter question or an online question, but you should at least know that if somebody tells you something about it, okay, you've heard it before in an anatomy class. All right, so what does this hydroxyapatite do? It's like the cement. It resists compression. Okay, so if you add together the organic compounds, namely collagen, and the inorganic compounds, namely hydroxyapatite, why is bone strong? Bone doesn't twist because of collagen, it can't stretch because of collagen, and it also can't compress because of hydroxyapatite, the calcium and phosphorus. Okay. So for instance, if we had bones with just calcium and phosphate but no collagen, had a nice strong bone, it would resist compression, but as soon as you start to stretch it, it would just fracture. It would just completely fracture away. Just like this column over here. Now that's one way that this cement column is similar to bone. Okay, cement is really good for compression. It can hold this building up. But it's very susceptible to twisting and also to stretching. But there's something in that column that prevents stretching and twisting. Does anybody know what's inside there? There's something called rebar. There's metal filaments inside that column that prevent twisting and stretching, because we don't want that column just breaking away. And if it didn't have that rebar, it would, because hydroxyapatite or cement only can resist compression. All right, so on the test, it's important that you know organic compounds inside bone, and why are they there? They give bone strength, but in which way? Prevent stretching and prevent twisting. What about compression? Will an organic compound prevent compression? It won't. You need also the inorganic compound, right? So if you got both organic and inorganic, then you have a nice, really strong bone that can withstand compression and stretching and twisting all at the same time. And if you're missing any of those, then your bones are weak as a result. All right, so here's a good question. What components of bone resist torsion? What resists torsion? What's another name for torsion? Twisting. What resists twisting in bones? Collagen fibers. What resists compression? Calcium and phosphate. You could call that hydroxyapatite if you want, but the calcium inside bones. And what resists tension, which prevents a bone from breaking when it's stretched? Again, it's the collagen fibers that prevent that. Okay, and to show you that, I think we have this slide right here. Here are the different lamellae, right? And within the lamellae, there are collagen fibers, which prevent stretching and twisting. And can you tell, what's the relationship of these collagen fibers from one lamellae to the next? What are they doing? They're crisscrossing each other. They're pointed in different directions, right? And so that means also that it provides strength to the osteon. So if you buy a tire, guess what? You have different belts in a tire that have maybe steel fibers in it or Kevlar fibers. Guess what the relationship of those fibers in a tire is? They're not all lined up parallel to each other, because then it could separate. They're lined up like this, so that makes the tire really strong. Right? The same thing for wood. Have you ever heard of a kind of wood called plywood? And wood has grain in it, and it's easy to break wood if you break it along the grain. So to make plywood strong, guess what they do with the grain in the wood? They put one grain like this, another grain like that, and then the next one like this, right? So the grains don't match up, and that makes plywood really strong as a result of that. So the orientation of these collagen fibers in different lamellae just makes bone stronger because of the orientation of these collagen fibers. Okay. Microscopic structure of bones. Oh, we talked about the concentric lamellae. Right here are concentric lamellae. Right, we talked about the circumferential lamellae that surround the whole bone on the outside of all the osteons. Canaliculi, lacunae, osteocytes, Wolfman's canals, Haversian canal. Yeah, we talked about all these already. Okay. And I think that's an exam figure. The breakdown of bone, the example of a long bone is also an exam figure. So make sure you study your exam figures. Does anybody not know where to find exam figures? Everybody knows, right? Because guaranteed they'll be on the exam. Okay. And it's really handy, because if you know your exam figures, you can use that knowledge to answer the multiple choice questions, and if true and false, or other kinds of questions, right? So try to get some of those pictures in your mind as best as you can. Drawing sometimes helps. Okay, bone formation and growth. What kind of cell helps bone grow or makes bone grow? It's an osteo of some kind. Osteocyte maintains mature bone, but a cell that makes bone grow from a little bone to a big bone is an osteoblast, right? So that's formation and growth. And don't forget, a clasp breaks bone down. All right, there are two kinds of bone formation that can take place, depending on whether it's a long bone or a flat bone. Flat bones are made by intramembranous ossification. Ossification just means when a bone develops, when calcium and phosphorus are deposited within the hyaline or maybe a membrane, hyaline cartilage, which then makes it really strong to compression. In this particular case, these bones are made out of membranes and not cartilage. So these make up flat bones, because membranes are long and flat. Okay. So when this happens, osteoblasts lay down a bone matrix within a membrane. Then the osteoblasts become osteocytes after they completely are surrounded by the bone matrix that the osteoblasts secrete. The bones that are made out of intramembranous ossifications are bones of the skull. So flat bones are made out of membranous ossification. But there's one example that's noteworthy, and it kind of looks like a long bone, and that is the clavicle. Clavicle is also made out of intramembranous ossification. So your clavicles were once membranes. And, you know, at birth, the bones that make up your skull are not completely formed. And so there's membranes, leftover membranes between these bones. We call those soft spots, right? And you got to be really careful with a newborn baby or a neonate because of those soft spots that are in their brain. That also means that their skull can twist and bend very easily as well. Membranes are also subjectable to puncture wounds. You got to make sure a baby's brain isn't punctured or skull isn't punctured. But also, it can't be stretched or vibrated because that could damage the skull and the brain underneath as well. Those soft spots are what we call fontanelles. In lab, we're going to look at some of those fontanelles, right? And they're just what? Non-ossified portions of the flat bones that make up a neonate's brain. And even a fetal brain, of course, doesn't have fontanelles. And so, why is that a good thing? You know now why it's a bad thing, because their brains aren't really protected from vibration or twisting or puncturing. But why is that a good thing? Because in order for this fetus to become a neonate to get through the birth canal, okay, their head is really big. It's got to shrink down. It's got to stretch, right, to get through the cervix and vagina just to be born. All right, so nobody would ever be born if your head wouldn't change during that process. And then when the head pops out, what happens? Probably looks really funny, and then it goes sort of back to how it's going to be, and then it grows back to how it's going to be. But how long does it take for those fontanelles to go away? So this neonate is going to be in jeopardy for how long? This really shocked me when I learned this. I thought it was maybe a couple months, 6 months, maybe a year, but it's what? It's 2 years those fontanelles are there, that you have to really support a neonate's head, never shake a neonate because that's vibration that could destroy the skull. That's a really long time. All right, and that's due to what? Intramembranous ossification. The other kind of ossification is what we call endochondrial ossification. This is a kind of ossification. Well, what does that mean? What does chondro mean? Osteo means bone, chondro means cartilage. So in this particular kind of ossification, a model of the bone was made out of cartilage first, so it's going to look like a humerus, right? Or maybe a phalanges or a radius or ulna, something like that. And then that cartilage, right, becomes bone. What kind of cell can convert cartilage into bone? What's it called? What's the name of a cell that builds bone? Builds bone, double B. Osteoblast. Okay, osteoblast. So osteoblasts then move into that hyaline cartilage and start to deposit bone matrix, which is like calcium and phosphorus, into the matrix. Right? And then that cartilage gets stronger and stronger and stronger as it becomes more like bone. That process is what we call ossification. All right, let me see if I can find some pictures of ossification. Here's some pictures. Oh, here's a really good idea. All right, so here is like a long bone, kind of looks like a long bone, and the blue represents hyaline cartilage. And so this bone is really weak, right? It can twist easily, it can compress, and so it can break really easily. So it's got to be converted into bone before we attach a lot of muscles to it and ask it to do a lot of work. So this is what? Endochondrial ossification. So what happens first, there are osteoblasts that form a collar around the, what do we call this part of the bone, epiphysis or diaphysis? Yeah, it's a diaphysis. So there is a bone collar that forms around the diaphysis of the bone, and it makes a nice hard ring around the diaphysis. Do I have that over here? Yeah, this is what we call primary ossification center. Okay, the bone forms in the very center of the bone, and it just grows more and more and more, but at the same time, the bone starts to get hollowed out on the inside. So what kind of cell takes this solid bone from this primary ossification center to this cavity right here? The osteoclasts. Okay, and what kind of membrane is lining the inside of this cavity? It is the endosteum. So the endosteum typically have osteoclasts in it that break bone down, that maintain this cavity inside bones. All right, and what's the membrane that's on the outside of a bone? The periosteum. The periosteum primarily has osteoblasts that build bone up. So here we see a bone that is being broken down and built up at the same time, but in the right kind of balance. So when a bone is growing, you have more osteoblastic activity than osteoclastic activity. So the bone gets bigger and stronger as a result. So the bone keeps growing and growing and growing. And then here is another ossification center that begins at the ends of a bone. What do we call the ends of a bone? The epiphyses. So the secondary ossification centers and the epiphyses start to grow, right? And it forms spongy bone. And then these two centers eventually merge, forming this epiphyseal plate. Okay? And that epiphyseal plate will remain until puberty. So these bones will grow in length until puberty, which then these epiphyseal plates ossify. That means they become bones, right? So this cartilage goes away, becomes bones, and that pretty much describes why, at least within one family, females are shorter than males. Okay, males typically are a little bit taller because who reaches puberty first? Who matures faster, males or females? Females do. Okay, and at that time, then their bones stop growing, but the male's bones still will grow for another year or two, and so they're typically a little bit taller. Okay, that's not an absolute rule, but maybe within a family, that's a pretty true rule, right? Just a small family, not all your cousins and aunts and uncles, but, you know, with your mom and dad and your sibs, that's pretty much true. Okay, so bones grow in length from these epiphyseal plates and in diameter, right, from this ring collar around the bone. Okay, what else do we have? A couple other little things. Remodeling of bone. Okay, remember, you get a new skeleton every 5 years, and osteoclasts break down bone, osteoblasts build it back up, and it's especially true when a bone is broken. So when a bone is broken, you have bone pieces in places where it shouldn't be. You should have fragments, you should have jagged edges of bones, and you don't want to have that inside your body. So the osteoclasts get rid of all those remnants of bone pieces that don't belong there, and then the osteoblasts will build bone up back where it should. That takes about 4 to 6 weeks. Okay? But there's a little bit more detail when a bone is broken and heals. Right? When a bone is broken, these blood vessels break and forms a blood clot. So there are connective tissues, there are like fibrin molecules that form a blood clot to prevent bleeding. And also there are other fibers then that are woven around between all the bone fragments and soft tissues that we call a callus. And a callus is not nearly as strong as a bone. So a broken bone during this time is very easily damaged because it hasn't been repaired yet. Right? And if the callus, once it's formed after 2 to 3 days, if the callus is broken, then the bone might not be built back the way it should be. So what do we do to bones, at least most bones, to protect that callus until the bone is built back stronger than ever? Yeah, it's casted, right? So that callus isn't broken because the callus just has collagen fibers in it. All right, then osteoblasts enter that callus. And what's the job of an osteoblast? Yeah. Yep, makes new bone by depositing calcium and phosphate and even some fibers, collagen into the matrix. And then after 4 to 6 weeks, that bone is even stronger in that particular location than what it was before. Because it's mostly just compact bone at that time, solid bone, really, really strong. But during that 4 to 6 weeks, you don't want to break that callus or developing bone because then it will probably never grow back the way it should by itself. All right, so that's the initial chapter on bones. And next time is going to be a test. And then 1 week from today, we'll start talking about some bones of the axial skeleton, bones of the skull and vertebral column. And then the week after this week is when you're going to have your practicum in lab. Okay, and you have SI that will deal with all of those tests, lecture tests, and probably even the practicum as well to some degree. Don't forget about SI. And the sign-in sheet is going around someplace too.